Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Zach Mason, an award-winning online coach with a background in competitive natural bodybuilding, placing first and second in international competitions. Zach helps busy CEOs and entrepreneurs regain lean, strong bodies without restrictive diets or time-sensitive workouts. His metabolic recomp method allows clients to lose fat, build strength, and stay energized with just three workouts per week. Zach's mastery of online marketing has grown his coaching business and led him to create VidSurface, where he mentors others on getting YouTube to organically show your videos to more people. With expertise in fitness, nutrition, and marketing, Zach empowers clients to transform their health and lifestyle sustainably. And I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and insights into using YouTube for business purposes. So, Zach, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, man?
Well, thank you for the invitation, and I'm excited for the chat.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. We got a lot of mutual friends, and I got a lot of respect for what you've accomplished. Now, how did you even get started? Obviously, you're running a couple of small businesses. Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Are you just carrying the torch that your parents carried before you, or?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So it's safe to say that when I was born into a family of hospitality, so restaurants and like cafes and stuff were normal for me to be hanging out at from a very young age. My dad was a chef and owned a bunch of restaurants, and yeah, growing up, just it was pretty normal to see my mom started a few businesses. My dad had a bunch of different businesses, and a lot of my other extended family have businesses, so that was just the norm. But eventually, I realized that I wanted to go on my own path and had different interests, and fitness was a big one of those, which completely changed my life, as long as it took to change my life. I wanted the results for a long time, but once I finally figured it out, that's how I got into the bodybuilding stuff, and it all kicked off from there. And probably my early 20s is when I started taking health and fitness seriously. But all I came from a background of entrepreneurial family.
So when you say you figured out the fitness, you were doing it as a business as already then? Like this was your first business as well, or was it a hobby and you were just working jobs while you did fitness as your passion and competing in the bodybuilding? How did you get started?
I never wanted to be a fitness coach or a personal trainer. Like I, in a very immature and naive point of view in my young days, I thought it was a bit of a crappy job. Like you would want to be a trainer at a gym all day. So it started out as a hobby. And at the time I was working in a family business, which was a very kind of new business that wasn't exactly where my passions were. And it was very stressful and demanding on it from a energy and schedule point of view. And I got to a point where I realized I wasn't looking after my body, and I was surrounded by people who were either overweight, drinkers, smokers, ate a lot of fast food, were very stressed. I could see down the road, if I stayed on that road, I would end up just like them. And
Right.
that is not where I wanted to go. And I was already taking steps down that path. And I thought, here's the time to make a change now. And that was in my early 20s. So it became initially more of a health conscious choice, and also as a coping mechanism to deal with the stress and anxiety of just life and not having much money and not really knowing my purpose and what I'm doing and not really having any sense of direction or qualifications or anything. And that passion grew as I started learning and training with people who knew more than I did and learning from them and asking for help. I found that was a huge thing in my early days, was just swallowing my pride and going up to the strongest, fittest people in the gym and just talking to them and just asking about what they're doing and what how they're training like that and learning different methods. And by doing that, I was like picking up clues and then trying it and getting better results until I had like my own coach who was teaching me everything. And yeah, look, one thing led to the other. I started seeing results in my body that I never actually thought was possible. Like I always wanted it, but I thought it was genetics or it was my Italian frame and just my makeup. I could never look like the guys on Men's Health. That was just never going to happen. And I
Right.
thought they were born with some special talent or genetics. Zach wasn't. And I turned out to prove that wrong. And so much so that competing somehow came on my radar from through a friend who used to compete. He kept nudging at me to give it a go. And I was like, I'm not doing this to stand on stage covered in black tan and a G-string flexing my muscles. That was never the goal here. I just wanted to do it for myself. But then, yeah, like he kept pressing, kept poking. And I eventually clicked, hey, if I could get on stage and do this, even though it's not really something I ever wanted to do, but if I could do it, it'd be like the biggest thing I've ever done at my young, early life. And for sure, beyond that, something positive would have to come beyond it. If you really commit to something, something good has to happen after. And it did. And I remember walking off stage and being like, shit, this is real. I just did this. I completely changed my body in a way that I never thought I could. And as I walked off, it's like the old Zach had died and the new Zach's here. It's like that scene in Lord of the Rings where Gandalf returns in the Two Towers and he's like, oh, yes, I remember they used to call me Gandalf. It was like, I walked backstage. I'm like, who is the old Zach? I don't know who he is anymore. So that was like my Gandalf moment. And yeah, I'd like to say it was all uphill from there, but obviously, the new mountains appear and the trek continues. I hope that all makes sense so far.
It makes great sense. And I especially love that you talk about when you commit to something. What I've noticed, because I've been fortunate enough to train with world champions and even some Olympians, is that when people commit to something and learn how to master one thing, there's transferable skills in understanding the process of how to excel in other areas of your life as well. So I think that there's real value in that. And a lot of kids, they don't figure that out. They just jump from thing to thing. They're chasing pleasure, right? Pleasure and what their friends are into versus discipline
Yeah.
and through something. So I think that's a really valid. And the other thing that you mentioned that I think is we're talking about, that I feel that there's so much, I hate this term, but there's not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just try to feed on you for as long as possible. And I think that what you talked about is that you needed accurate information, because the mainstream knowledge of what diet, like if you follow the food pyramid, you'd never get on stage at any of these
No.
bodybuilding competitions. And yet that's what everybody's taught. And so it's almost there's an intentional lack of accurate knowledge in the core curriculum we're taught in society. And that's just something I wanted to point out as well. That's where we need people that can guide the light. And it creates businesses, but it's also tragic. So I'm glad you found your way through that. What were some of the biggest challenges for you in not so much the personal fitness journey, but in your business journey? What were some of the biggest challenges that you've had to face in your business career?
Getting into the fitness stuff after competing, so that was a decision. I thought, okay, I've competed now. I've learned these skills. People are taking notice. They're asking for help, and I initially started helping some people for free and just proving that my method actually worked for people who are not me, and it did. And I thought, okay, I can do this. So then I got my qualifications while working in a gym. So I just got a job in a gym. That was like my first official job outside of family business, which was super weird because I never really had a boss who was not related to me. And it was an interesting experience. I learned a lot about how employees can easily just be treated like robots. And that drove me to get out of employment and become a sole trader working for myself within the gym. So my first big challenge was, yeah, dealing with that, getting paid horrendously, not like low rates per hour, even as a casual with no benefits. It was just a really sucky time, but it allowed me to literally spend 8 to 10 hours a day in the gym, just watching the PTs, learning human behavior. What time do people come? What do they do? What are they doing wrong? Where can I help them? Learning my way around the gym, different personalities, who goes to the gym at 5 a.m. versus who goes at 5 p.m. Like just living in the gym became my whole life. And naturally, that's when I became a trainer. So it was just from scratch. And the thing with the gym I was in, there was no like PT, there was no personal trainer like program. There was no PT manager. There was no curriculum. There was nothing. It was like, oh, you want to be a PT? Cool. Sign the contract, pay us rent, and good luck. So I had to jump in the deep end and just start swimming and trying to figure stuff out really quickly. And thankfully, the manager at the time was super helpful. He was a great guy. We had a lot of fun. And he, like the manager of the gym, not the PT, and he helped me out a lot to get clients and just get going to a point where I had enough clients so I could completely quit the job and just go all in on training. And I did that for a while and built it up to just a very modest income for part-time hours. It was difficult to keep pushing because the gym has a limited capacity of people. Plus, there's also other trainers in the gym. So the competition was high and the supply of clients was capped. And sooner or later, I hit my threshold where I'm like, I could literally spend 6 hours a day here and not get a new client because there isn't any. Like, the membership is the member base. So unless the gym is doing active marketing and bringing people off the street, there's nobody else coming into the gym. And I realized very quickly that this would only ever be just a modest kind of income for reasonable hours, but annoying hours because you have to get up at 5 a.m. and then everyone's at work and then you have to go back to the gym in the evening. So I was like, okay, this isn't going to be a long-term thing. I can't be 40 years old, 50 years old in the gym doing this, trying to raise a family. Right. And that's when the idea of online came into it, but I had no idea about marketing or any idea of how to package up a program. And I was just like a perfectionist procrastinator back then where I couldn't see how I could just make a program and sell to people. I'm like, no, they're like, you've got to figure out this and figure out that. Like, I was way too like detailed and perfectionistic with programming and diets and stuff. But I eventually joined a course which taught me, it's like a fast track 12 weeks to 10K kind of thing, and just copied all their templates and just got into it. And this was pre-COVID, like 2018, when things were just so easy. Facebook ads was simple and easy. Online marketing wasn't saturated. You didn't have to be a genius to figure it out. Things got up and running and I ended up spending like 20 grand on Facebook ads, but I only made 20 grand. So I was like, after 4 months, I had nothing to show for it. And it crushed my motivation big time. And I quit, but not like wanting to. It's, I felt like I had quit, but I was still trying to keep it moving.
Mentally.
And yeah, it's, I feel like I couldn't cut it. Like, same mentality with the training. Like, I'll never be these fit guys on men's health. It was like, I'll never be this online coach guy. And I started settling. And you know what it's like? When the fire's burning, you can't really put it out. So it was like a little tiny flickering candle and I just kept it alive and learned marketing, which took me at least a whole year, probably longer, of learning organic marketing and how to talk on camera. I remember there was a point where I actually bought a camera. Like, I sold some of my stuff, possessions, to buy a camera to make YouTube videos. This was like 2017, maybe, something like that.
Okay.
And I remember like turning the camera on and I just couldn't talk. Like, my throat was like swelling and my face went red and I was like, my heart rate.
Audio is easy, but as soon as you get me on video, I'm like, it's just lighting.
Yeah.
Then I shave, I need a haircut, then I brush my teeth, you know,
yeah.
I had too much salt yesterday, I look puffy, like it's just 101 things, yeah.
Yeah, so that, I remember the humble beginnings, I couldn't even talk on camera, and so many times I would turn it on, 5 minutes would go past, I've literally said nothing, and then something would happen, I'd be like, oh, I can't do this, and turn it off, and I would just like walk away. And I thought, I'm not meant to be on camera. It's not for me. And yeah, so thankfully broke out of those patterns and I just kept trying and learning marketing and just making a video. And if it sucked, I'll just delete it and do another one and do another one. And after many reps, just like the gym, I'm putting like hundreds and hundreds. Like, I think I've posted, I just post, I don't know, it could be video, text, whatever it is, thousands, probably 2,000 to 3,000 posts over the last couple of years. And just by doing those reps, like doing, if you do 1,000 bench presses, you're going to be really good at bench. If you do 1,000 squats, you're going to be really good at squats. 1,000 chin-ups, you're going to be really good at chin-ups.
I agree with that principle, but I've been working on my squat for 8 years and it still sucks. But, you know, I'm just busting your balls. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
So what would you recommend to someone who's starting out and struggling? You mentioned you learned organic marketing, and I think that's an important distinction because you paid ads. And you got some results, but you weren't really profiting. And then you say you turned to organic marketing. What is the big differentiator between the two for you?
Again, I'm not Alex Hormozy or anything like that. But in my limited perspective, I would say that what I learned from ads is that generally we're marketing to a cold audience. So the people that we're marketing to don't know who I am. They don't know what I do. They're probably in a rush. They probably don't give a crap about what I'm saying. So if I don't give them an instantly clear reason to pay attention, they're not going to. Whereas with organic, we can slowly but surely build up like a digital farm almost of like people who over time will kind of, you're building this relation, like almost like a one-way relationship where they're getting to learn about you. Maybe you don't know them. They don't comment on your posts. They don't like your posts, but they're reading them and they're paying attention. And they're maybe 6 months or 12 months later, they will reach out when they're ready and say, "Hey, I've been reading all your stuff for ages and I agree with what you're saying and I like your stuff. Can you help me?" Whereas with my experience with ads to date has been like, it's like we're walking into a networking event for people who don't want to be at the networking event. And we're saying, "Hey, how's it going? I'm Zach." And they're like, "Who the hell are you? Why are you talking to me?" So that's how I visualize it. So it's, they're both just a different skill set. And I feel like with organic, you have the complete freedom to almost say whatever you want if you're willing to face the repercussions of what you say, depending on what you say. And you can show more of yourself and your lifestyle without the expense of paying Facebook to potentially show content that isn't going to be profitable, but
Right.
would otherwise be profitable organically over a long period of time.
Do you have any tips for people that are in the content marketing game trying to monetize? Because I think it's good. I think I agree with everything you're saying 100%. And I think where lots of people struggle is converting from having just being social to actually trying to generate leads for their business. Can you speak to that a little bit? How do you handle that dance?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what worked really well for me and is getting more difficult because of AI and the exponential increase in content creation. However, what worked well for me was putting out very clear and direct offers, but not too often. So being consistent, putting in the daily content reps, or if it's not daily, like at least maybe every second day, like whatever the pace is. But let's be honest, like these days, we've got AI, we've got ChatGPT and all the other AIs. Like everyone can post at
Every day.
least once a day, man. Like it's so easy to do that now. You can create 50 posts in two clicks of a button. Like it shouldn't even be a question. However, post daily, so put in the reps and you're obviously testing. So you're starting to see what works, what doesn't work. But it's also a fine line between getting engagement. Usually the people who engage, they're not necessarily buyers. In general, if I look back at every client I've worked with over the past, say, 5 years that I've been online, probably 95% of them didn't like or comment on any of my content. Yet 95% of all the people who like and comment don't buy my stuff. So there's a difference between the conversion content and the value content. So I would say maybe like 80-20 could work well, but depending on your offer and who you're marketing to and how big the audience is, how big your audience is, the total addressable market. So like some niches that is really small, so you can't be pitching constantly. However, when there's a huge market and if you have a huge audience, you could be pitching more often. There's got to be a ratio that you figure out of, okay, if I post this many value posts, then I can post a direct call to action that will get people putting their hand up and reaching out. And something that's worked well for me is just being very direct occasionally, like maybe once a month or twice a month, where I'll be like, "Hey, this is what we're doing. Here's the results you're going to get in X amount of weeks. This is the problem you're facing. Here's how we're going to solve it. This is my method. DM me lean or metabolic or whatever it is." So just giving them an easy way to reach out to learn more. And then that becomes an opportunity to have a discussion and a conversation around whether or not that person is even qualified for my program or my help. So.
I love that. So you're talking about it's like a three-tier process. So one of the things that you said, even though you put your offer out there, you weren't really, it didn't sound like you were selling on social. What you said is get them to put their hand up. So your offer is really a hand-raising post. Who here is interested to come off of social media and have a conversation? And then you also said something else where you will qualify them. And I think that's really powerful, especially you mentioned the pandemic. Prescription without diagnosis is malpractice in medicine, meaning prescribing something or mandating something without diagnosing the need is malpractice in medicine. And so and it works the same way in sales. Nobody wants to be sold, but people like to buy. Hey, who would be interested in this? Here's what I got. Here's what it'll do for you. Here's what to do next if you're interested. So we can talk and find out if it's a fit. And then the next conversation is not you being the shining, the singing and dancing bear, impressing them. Wow, it's actually a matchmaking thing, right? It's qualifying them typically three layers deep. One of them, it helps if one of them is binary, meaning it's a yes, no, meaning I can get results for people, but they have to have an email list of at least 300 people, or they have to have at least 300 followers on social media. Some binary yes, no answer is really good to have in your qualification criteria. And then after that, you're making your sales. That sounds great. That sounds really easy to do. That sounds very reliable. I think that's really powerful. Are there any sort of specific skills or behaviors that you believe are important to improve or develop as a business owner or even an online business owner?
Yeah, I think regardless whether it's online business is still an offline business. I'm a human sitting here in an office. I'm not a avatar in a computer, right? The principles are the same. But if I look at business and fitness very similar, there's repetitions required, there's data required. Like with fitness, I take a data-driven approach with biofeedback. I don't coach anyone unless I can see their data and I know what direction their body's heading, what are their blood markers, how much energy are they burning, what are they eating, the ratios and macros. Because if I don't, I am just guessing. And like you said before, prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. If I'm a coach saying, hey, you should eat keto, but I don't know anything about your metabolic health and I don't know about your dietary habits and the times you eat and how often you work out and don't, then I'm just throwing an opinion out into the wind and telling you should do something for the sake of making me look good and you feeling good. So I would say integrity, data, and expecting things, like expecting to learn rather than always expecting for things to work. Because in my early phase of business and maybe even more recent, I would get caught up in shiny object syndrome and think, oh, this is the thing that's going to really work. And I would come in with these high hopes and expectations, thinking if I just do what Joe Blow said on Instagram, it's all going to work. And it didn't. And then I would try something else and try something else. And then I'd get frustrated with myself and be like, oh, like, I don't do this in fitness. Like, I still bench, I still squat, I still do chin-ups. After 10 years, I don't change those exercises. I'm still doing the foundations, yet I caught myself in business. Like, it's like turning up to the gym and saying, oh, I'm going to just throw the ball at the wall. Oh, next, and then tomorrow I'm going to do boxing today. Oh, and then tomorrow I'm going to do box jumps. And then next day I'm going to do planks. If you do a different exercise every day, you're not going to get results. You're just going to be burning a bunch of energy and sweating, but you're not going to see any difference.
Yeah.
And I was doing that in business. So I would say to myself, all right, I need to pick something. And that's when I went all in on like LinkedIn, and that became my biggest platform. Mm-hmm. And then once I built a base on LinkedIn, then I started focusing on YouTube, because YouTube, unlike pretty much every other platform, it doesn't suppress good content after 6, 12, 24 hours, where if you have a really good piece of content with a great idea, with an audience who is interested in that content and there is a demand for it, and there's not too much supply of that content, YouTube will keep promoting that video to that audience. Mm. And it took me a while to crack the code, and I quit many times, but every time I came back, learning something new, testing, bought a bunch of courses, read a bunch of resources on it, hired mentors on YouTube who were working with massive channels and soaking it all in and applying it video after video. And it just became like the gym. I'd turn up one video. Doesn't have to be every single week. Like, it's just one video as soon as you can get it out. Because doing one video a week can be really difficult for some people. If it's one video every fortnight or one video every month, it's like you're sticking to that cadence, but every video you're just trying to improve one metric or one variable. Maybe you're spending a bit more time on the idea. Maybe you're spending a bit more time on the thumbnail, a bit more time on the titles. Maybe you're getting more feedback on your packaging before you go and make the video, so that you're not wasting time making a video that no one's going to watch. And I could see there was just this, it's like system in my head of how, what a video process should look like. And then once I refined that myself, it started working and I was like, okay, it's not talent. It's not some special, you know, you don't have to be born.
There's no one in the sky ordaining someone that you shall be the next YouTube great. There's not a certain number of passes to be handed out.
That's right. Yeah, there isn't. And just like the gym, it's a repetition game. And even you look at Mr. Beast, like he's the number one YouTuber, right? But if you look back at where he started, it was like him in his bedroom or whatever, just doing really wild videos.
Yeah.
Obviously, when it was early and nobody else was doing it, which is another, that's a whole other thing. But humble beginnings and just, yeah, embracing the suck, just like you would in a workout. Like it's going to burn, it's going to hurt, your body's going to be sore, but you're going to get something from that. And it's the same thing with YouTube. And I had to swallow my pride, and everything I thought was good and it ended up being crap, and I had to change it and learn from the people who were doing it better and just go, okay, I'm probably 50 videos away from being much better at this. So if I just get to that 50th video, then I'm going to be better than the first one. And then if I get from 50 to 100, I'm get that 100th video is going to be better than the 50th. And just like the 100th bench press is going to be better than your first bench press. It's the
Yeah.
same thing.
I love that. I love focusing on progress, not perfection. That's a really important and process. Focus on process, project,
Yes.
progress, not perfection. See,
Process-driven progress. That's the way.
yeah, there we go. Let's say that 20 times fast. So you say you cracked the code. So what's the 80-20 for people listening? Like you said, if someone's coming to this, they got a new channel, they got no followers, maybe they're an expert in what they do, maybe they're really good at what they do, but they have no idea how to approach and handle YouTube. What are some of the fundamentals?
Yeah, so about a year ago, probably more than a year ago now. Yeah, probably a year and a half. I started focusing a lot more on my YouTube channel. And at the same time, I was helping out James with fitness, James Shamko. So we were doing a transformation with his physical fitness and his strength. And he's done awesome in that. You'd be shocked at how well he performs in the gym for his age and how great he looks. He doesn't show it off, which I respect, but he's done awesome in the fitness side. And we were both like keen on YouTube at the time. And he has a passion channel that not many people know about, because unless you're into that passion, you wouldn't watch the content. So that's the first clue, is that if you're going to make content, then it needs to be content made for a specific audience who wants to consume it. Don't assume that everyone is going to want to watch your videos just because you made them. It's going to, YouTube will only show it where the interest is. And if there's no interest, chances are you're not going to get the views that you might want to get. And we started applying different techniques, and we learned an awesome amount from a few people in James's community about YouTube, and we started applying that. And I happened to also have a big passion in the channel that James was building up, and it was a surfing channel, and I learned to surf in my early teenage years and had surfed on and off since then. And it's, yeah, it's a passion of mine. So I just started, yeah, helping out where I could, because I love thumbnails, I love design, I've always loved editing. That's why I did photography and art in high school, because they were my favorite topics. Even though I never got my high school certificate, I just stayed there and spent all my time and effort on art and photography and design and stuff, and carried those skills with me. So I was helping out, hey, try this with thumbnail and maybe do this video idea, or doing a bit of research. So the first biggest thing was the audience. Who are we making the videos for? Who's going to watch this? Why are they going to watch it? And then focusing on the big idea. So typically the best videos have the best idea behind it. They may have a good thumbnail, they may have a really good title, but the title and the thumbnail sit on the foundation of the big idea of the video. And the big idea is often, or can doesn't always have to be so obvious. It can be something that's like, it's more of like a feeling. And I'm trying to think of an example. So yeah, a video that really blew up recently was like, for example, like, are cheap surfboards worth the money? So it's a very strong title. It begs a question, but at the same time, there's so much below the surface and the big idea of that concept, which is, as a surfer, we're always thinking like, should I buy a new board? Should I buy a new one? Should I get secondhand? Is secondhand bad? Is it going to break? Is it quality? This all it creates all these questions and unanswered questions that we have in our mind that we want answered, so that we can go and buy the next best board that's going to unlock better surfing, that's going to give us more fun, help us catch more waves, make us feel good out in the surf. And even just every time we buy a surfboard, it sparks us to go and surf more. So there's all this hidden meaning behind that one title. And the big idea was all of that is the big idea behind that title. And it did so well. That video got, so far, I think it's like 42,000 views. And at that time, this channel didn't even have 1,000 subscribers. So we got 40x views ratio to subscriber count. And yeah, and that's my big point is if you get the big idea right and then you package it well with a title that resonates directly with the right audience and the thumbnail gets their attention and it feeds into that title and makes them click, then you have an opportunity for your video to do well. And that's only then you should focus on the video, because if the big idea in the packaging is not congruent and it's not potent and powerful, no one's going to watch the video anyway.
I love that. This is reminding me, it's old school's new school again. Here's the thing, when I first got into online marketing, it was called the 10 by 10 by 4. And it was the top 10 frequently asked questions, the top 10 should but don't ask questions, and then four kind of call to action videos. So the idea was, if you're brand new and you've got no idea where to start with those, top 10 frequently asked questions, the top 10 should but don't ask questions, and then the four videos. And the four videos, one's like the one you just stick at the end of everyone. If you like this, go to my site, blah, 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 and get the other 19 videos. And then there was like a welcome video for the page. Welcome. If you want all 20 videos, put your email here. And then a thank you video on the page. And then like a VSL or something like that. That was the basic model. It was a 10 by 10 by 4. But I think what you're saying, if you can just, if you, what I love is that it's this is marketing 101. And this is a mistake I've made so many times. I'm embarrassed to even admit it. But the who is so critical. Like, people get so caught up with, it's almost like I did Brazilian jiu-jitsu for years, and so many people get caught up in the new fancy moves, the rubber guard, the turtle guard, the Z guard, all this stuff. But you look at some of the sport, there's a guy, I think it's Car no, is it Carlos Gracie? Hey, Hodger Gracie. Hodger Gracie is one of the winningest jiu-jitsu fighters in the history of the sport. I'm not a fanboy. I'm nothing but respect, but he's just got a ton of titles. And he's also one of the most boring ones to watch, I would say, because everybody knows what he's gonna do. He's gonna judo flip you, he's gonna get top mount, and he's gonna gi choke you. But the problem is that no one can stop him from doing that to them. And he's just won all these titles, and everybody knows what's coming. He's gonna try to judo flip me. And so they're like, wait, oh, he's gonna get mount. No one can stop it. And we're talking about the best in the sport, but it's just these bedrock fundamentals. And so really, there's a couple of things you just mentioned, I think, is worth people maybe re-listening to more than once, where it's the who, the why they'll watch it, and the big idea. And that those, like I say this to clients sometimes, if I told you Beyonce was naked waiting in a hotel room and she wants you specifically to come visit her, you wouldn't care if I wrote it on a napkin and crayon, right? Like, the content, the significance of what I'm sharing is what really matters most. And that's such a powerful tip. Where do you see things going over the next sort of 5, 10 years? You mentioned AI. We've had a lot happen geopolitically. There's a lot of economic stuff happening. There's technological revolutions coming abroad. What are you watching come down the pipeline? How are you preparing for the future?
That's a billion-dollar question, isn't it? And if we all knew what was going to happen, then we would go there or not go there. But it's hard to say because of AI advancing so quickly. But I want to believe that these platforms are also going to a degree, regulate so that we're not all being fed deep fake content that we can't tell the difference anymore. It's already happening, but the production of content is ramping up. And it's only going to continue to ramp up, but it almost doesn't matter because we're not, time doesn't change. We only have 24 hours in a day. We can only consume within the time that we have to consume, and everyone's getting busier, and inflation's jacking up prices. People are working longer, and like time is limited, and it's always going to be limited. So you can put out 100 videos a day, but that doesn't mean everyone's going to watch all those 100 videos. That is a real problem. So I think, at least the direction I'm taking is just to keep things real and authentic. I believe, and this belief could change depending on future situation, but we currently believe that if we just keep it real, keep it authentic, genuine, people are going to value human rawness and authenticity. And as cliche as it sounds, or being authentic and genuine, they're going to value that more because everything else is so fake. So if we can continue to demonstrate that I'm a real human, I experience human things, I don't live in pixels on a screen, and this is not AI, this is me, I can punch myself in the face, it's going to hurt, it's not AI doing that, then I'm going to have a fighting chance against the robots. And in any event, it's about serving the right audience for the right reason out of service and not always trying to get something. And that's one thing that I have my own internal battles with online marketing, is that a lot of the people I learn from are very good at getting money from people in return for them not really getting what they need. Like, they might be getting what they want
Yeah, I know
in
exactly.
exchange. And this has held me back for years because I don't like the feeling of selling something that is great for my bank account, but it isn't necessarily going to solve their problem. Hence why I've stuck to one-on-one coaching for so long, because I can get inside of the problem and start connecting dots versus being like, hey, just watch my 100-hour course with all the time you don't have and give me 19997. Sure, that works, and no hate towards people who do that. And I have programs and they're great. And if you follow it, you'll get results. And it's priced appropriately for the effort that it took me to build a damn thing. But I still value the human connection, and I think there's always going to be a place for that. And there's going to be a place for the swings and the pendulum between low ticket, high ticket, medium ticket, no ticket events, small events, big events. Like, it's all cyclical, right? So right now, I would say high ticket is not in its best place. It was post-COVID, when everyone was cashed up and the economy was booming. High ticket was just like a no-brainer for everyone. And people were willing to part with a reasonable amount of money for a reasonable service and result. Now people want everything for nothing. And I think that's just a bigger effect of the economy. And let's, fingers crossed, whoever the hell is in power in the US, let's hope that the next 4 years is prosperous for everyone. And I believe it will be. And it's going to be good for business, I hope. And we can act accordingly. Serve good people for good pay and do the right thing. And I like to treat business and content like a farm. Every day we wake up, and for most of the year, there is going to be nothing above the ground, just dirt. And eventually there'll be some sprouts and some stalks, and then maybe a tree and some branches and some leaves. It's that last little bit where the fruits are popping out that we can harvest, but we can't wake up every day to harvest. And if we're trying to harvest every day, we're just going to have soil that's going to be burnt out of its nutrients, and then we'll have to sell the farm to a warehouse and go move to another farm. And this is what a lot of marketers do. They turn up to the farm and they super soak it with a fire hydrant every day, and they blaze it with extra UV light, and then they throw all this fertilizer and chemicals and pesticides to get rapid branches popping out of the ground, and then they quickly harvest all the fruits as quick as they can, just scrape the market of all the profits and money. And then as soon as they see it tapering off and tanking, they shut shop and boom, see you later with the profits, and they go do it again in a new farm. And that's fine, that works, but not for me. I want to stay
I think
in the
it's
same
becoming
farm.
less and less because all the this is like people that do illegal things to make money. I always, whenever I hear something like that, I'm like, man, if they put all that time, energy, and ingenuity, like a lot of these people are really clever. A lot of scam artists are really clever people. They just are climbing, they're just running down a dead end street because you're going to do all this work to set things up. We talked about focus on process and progress, not perfection. They got a process, they're perfecting it. And then you go to jail for 40 years. You're like, you don't get to those compound returns. And all, whether it's personal relationships or business, all the benefits come from the long-term compounding effect. You talk about building a farm. I think that's a great idea. That's actually where original list building used to come from. It was the real estate industry. A realtor would farm a neighborhood. They would set up a barbecue and a meet and greet, and they would go door to door and hand out their card and shake people's hands and meet them. Because people typically buy when they're ready to buy, not when you're ready to sell. You can do things like create scarcity events to try to trigger things. That's true. That's real. But generally speaking, people buy when they're ready to buy, not when you're ready to sell. You can give them a reason why to buy now from you. But generally speaking, if I just, you could be the best chef in the world. And if I just left an all-you-can-eat restaurant, it doesn't matter how good your food is, I'm not ready to buy. And so would farm neighborhoods and build relationships. And you talked about, I almost feel like you're using your organic marketing almost how I use my email list. I've had an email list for years, and I used to have a martial arts school, and I had a guy that came in and did some demo classes and never joined, never paid me money. But I had an email list and I kept in touch with them, and I sent a newsletter, and I just stayed in touch with people and stayed in touch with people and stayed in touch with people and updated them with what I was doing. And some people would opt out. Some people would say, I hate you. Some people say whatever, but I just kept trudging along. 8 years later, this guy starts a business with a friend, and they contact me, and they end up paying me something like 25, 30 grand over 15 months. And it took him 8 years to pay me a single penny. But when he was ready to buy and I had a hand-raising offer, that just, it just worked out. And so that's what's the whole 10-year overnight success. So lucky. It looks so easy for you. It's so easy. Oh, I don't swear a lot in my podcast, but I love this quote. It's success is like pregnancy. Everybody congratulates you, but nobody knows how many times you got fucked to achieve it. It's a real thing there. So I think you've given great foundational, like grassroots, salt of the earth people to have answers for today. What do you feel are some of the greatest mistakes that you see other entrepreneurs making? We've danced around this. You've given lots of tips and tricks, but to really hit the nail on the head, what do you think are some of the greatest mistakes the other people making in their businesses?
Building a business that they don't really want to be in or want to have long term. Yeah. And I say that because I don't know who came up with this quote, but it was along the lines of, you can't win a competition or you can't win a race that you don't really want to be in. And building a life around a business that doesn't allow you to enjoy the life that you truly want to have. And then you have to justify having this crazy business by having a crazy life. So the biggest mistake I see is not necessarily always a business thing. It's a life thing. It's a personal thing.
Yeah.
And acting and behaving in a way that you think is good because everyone else is doing it versus you being sovereign and just making your own decisions based on what's good for you first. And if that means it comes at the cost of money, cost of clients, if you have to fire clients, if you have to make less money for a period of time to actually wake up sane and content and feel good about who you are and what you do, then maybe that's a mistake you need to fix versus chasing more money, because there's nothing external that can fulfill of a deep void within. There just isn't. No matter how hard you look.
I love that. Zach, this has been a great call. As I said, people may want to listen to it more than once, just make sure they get all the nuts and bolts. I got a couple of pages of notes here. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, I think you asked some really good questions, and I obviously you're all audience savvy people. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be listening to your podcast. So I'm sure they can connect the dots here and there along the way.
And if people want to connect, if they want to learn more, if they want to see what you're doing, if they want to get your help with their organic content or help with their YouTube, what are some of the best ways for them to reach out and get in touch?
So vidsurface.com, that's my YouTube process ebook, 10 steps to 10x your views and get YouTube promoting your videos further. It's just my process that I put together in one document that walks you through how to go through the whole thing. And if you feel like you need more one-on-one assistance from that, there's other options too beyond that. So I'd say start there. And if you want to get a taste of my own content, find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube.
Yeah, so go check out Zach Mason, ZACMASON, or go check out vidsurface.com. That is VIDSURFACE.com, vidsurface.com, Zach. Zach, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. You got your own followers, your own community, your own clients, your own projects. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you. It was awesome.